Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, here we are for episode 43 of Digital Divination. So, Ron, how's this week going for you?
Wet, I guess, is the
yes.
Things have been that typical November rainy that we get. The rainy season comes right after spider season in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes.
You know, you got a couple weeks where there's just kind of spiders everywhere, and then after that, the rains come and they kind of hang around for, you know, a couple of weeks even.
Well, I think that's probably the part that people that move out here have the hardest time getting used to. My daughter has a boyfriend, and they both moved from Calgary out to Vancouver, which is really similar weather here. Mm-hmm. And they're used to, you know, it's cold in the wintertime, but it's dry, you know.
Right.
Here it's warm in the wintertime, but it's awful wet. So
it is, and it stays. But having lived so much of my life in Utah and then in Chicago, where snow is just absolutely, it's definitional, right, in winter, I'd really rather have the rain. You know, I prefer the rain to the snow. I don't love the dark, but I've got to say, as much light as we get in the summer, it's really kind of worth it, right?
Yeah, being up north, you kind of get that weird dichotomy where you get the really long summers and then it shifts around in the winter. So,
yep. How about you? How's your week been?
You know, it's been kind of busy. It's the end of the term for us. So last week was week 9, and then this is week 10. And so all my students have presentations, they're finishing up projects, they have final exams. And so they're all kind of going nuts. And of course, everybody waits to the last minute. So they're all contacting the instructor saying, help, we don't know how to do this. We don't know. Can you explain this again? Can you do this? And so, you know, most of the time, they don't really ask me a lot of questions. They're pretty good. Always like at the end of the term, they're constantly getting stuck. And it's like, even on the weekend, you know, where it's my time and I don't have to respond, I feel some obligation to help them out, since everything becomes due on Tuesday, and I know they're just all, you know, at their wit's end trying to get stuff together, not just for my class.
Frantic about it. Now, do you find that they're still reaching out to you electronically a lot, even though you're back to in-person teaching, or do they come in during office hours? Do you even have office hours?
Well, I do have office hours, and nobody ever comes. Usually they talk to me before class, after class. And then it's all electronically. I was willing to meet people in person. We would go to a ventilated conference room and meet in person, but nobody came by. And it turns out a lot of the other faculty are very uncomfortable having students up in our normal space. So they made it basically so all students have to schedule appointments now rather than just drop by. And, you know, I told my students, you know, if you need to get a hold of me, you want to meet, that's fine. Just shoot me a quick email, and we'll meet somewhere and we can talk. But generally I get to class early and I stay late, and that's when they talk to me about stuff. If they need to talk in person.
I see. So. Yeah, it makes some sense. I did the bulk of my schooling back when, you know, you could send emails, but it was just so so uncommon and formal, I guess, that it was just easier to stop by during office hours or to, you know, like you say, catch a professor before or after class in order to get questions answered. Oh, back in the old days, very old days.
Yeah, I actually don't mind office hours, because usually I'm in the office, I'm getting other work done, and people come by and we chat and get caught up, and that's I think it's fine. When they send questions electronically, it's really, you know, they'll send a question, and the thing is, I can't really get at what is the real underlying thing they don't understand. And it causes like several, you know, cycles going back and forth till I finally figure out, oh, this is what they don't get, and I can point them right to something. Whereas if I'm talking to them, you can knock it out a lot more quickly. So I will try to get people up on Zoom to do things. And in the last year when we did everything all online, I had Zoom office hours where I would sit on Zoom for the entire time, just waiting for, they could pop in whenever they wanted. And that really kind of limited me in what else I could do, because I had to be right at the computer. So I decided I'm just going to have regular office hours, or they can schedule appointments for Zoom meetings.
And then you know specifically.
Right, right. And, you know,
that makes a lot of sense.
It was okay. But I'm glad. So this is this coming up week. So this is Sunday night. And so this week is week 10. We have some finals, so I have a little bit of grading. But then I'm off until like the first week of January.
Oh, wow. So not just your pre-Thanksgiving all the way to post-New yes. Year's.
Yeah, they changed it because of the pandemic. We used to have a Thanksgiving break, come back for like a week or two, and then have a Christmas break. Because that a lot of students would travel over Thanksgiving, it would impose potential quarantine issues and bringing back COVID back and forth and the whole travel stuff. They decided, well, you know what, we'll just start early. So we started the term 2 weeks earlier than usual, and then we were ending 2 weeks earlier so that the students can just go, the faculty can go, and boom. So I'm pretty excited about that. It's a big chunk of time where I can do some research, do some writing, things like that.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Do you have writing set up? Do you have freelance that you're poised to jump into, or how's your freelance looking?
Well, you know, I've put out my normal feelers. Most people don't have anything right now for me. There is this one small third-party publisher. It's Run Amok Games. I don't know if you're familiar with them. There's a project I might be starting with them.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a thing that you'd be able to spend some time on, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just sent in today my second to the last outstanding freelance project I have. I've got one outstanding freelance project, which is it's huge and it's a treat, right? It's one of those things where I've already done a lot of planning work on it, but I'm sort of holding myself back from getting into doing the actual deep writing, tens of thousands of words of writing, because mm-hmm. I know I'm going to enjoy it so much that that's all I'm going to want to do. And I had to finish wow. these other projects yeah, first, because yeah. otherwise I know I wouldn't get to them, because I'm just this one in particular, I had a lot more sort of freedom to design what I wanted to do. So it's something, an adventure sort of structure that I love, with some content I've been eager to do. And I don't know, I'm excited. It's going to carry me through the holidays in a very, very fun way. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, you know, you had mentioned earlier when we were chatting about a potential topic for this, that we would talk about things that we were thankful for, given that this should be coming out kind of the week of Thanksgiving.
Or yeah.
Actually the week before, but we won't have another episode before Thanksgiving. So.
Right, like the next one we do will be all post-Thanksgiving, and we'll right. be in our tryptophan haze, and it'll just be a lot of sort of grunting and complaining that we ate so much. And no, I think taking some time to reflect on the things that we're thankful for is always something that's really important. And I feel like I try to sort of live my life with a sense of gratitude all the time, you know, remind my wife how lucky I am to have her, and my kids that I'm proud of them, and, you know, that the things that I'm thankful for, keeping them at the forefront. But considering this is digital divination, and this is, you know, sort of Starfinder focused, I gotta say, you know, having gone 43 now episodes of being able to sort of chat about Starfinder, it's no small thing. It's something that I'm really thankful for, to be able to dig deep into this game with you and talk about the aspects of it that really interest us, the aspects of the narrative storytelling that are sort of important to us, that we like to see, some of the ways that we kind of, you know, play off of each other on the gaming experiences that we've had. I think that Starfinder is a thing that's brought me a lot more than I might have expected. And it would be remiss of me to not say I'm really thankful not just for digital divination, which I absolutely am, but with the Starfinder game and all of the different things that it offers.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting perspective there. It's obviously I'm very thankful for a lot of things. You know, my health in particular had been very, very poor for a long time, and you know, I talk to my wife about this all the time. How blessed I've been to have this wonderful wife for so many years, and for her to have donated a kidney to me and completely changed my life. You know, is that by far I. You know, I owe her so much on that that I'm trying to think for Christmas gifts. It makes it really hard.
You know? what organ can you share back? You know, I don't think you're going to be able to make the make it parody there.
But in terms of, you know, looking at what I am thankful for from Starfinder, which is, I think, one of the things that we talked about maybe discussing. It, you know, I think back when we first got started, it actually relates a lot to my health. I was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, my health was really taking a turn for the worse. I couldn't get out and do a lot of things I used to do. And so I was looking to get back into gaming. And I got an invite from a friend of ours, Rob Helm, to come to Free RPG Day, and where he was going to be doing a demo of RuneQuest, which he's, you know, very much enjoys. And at that demo, another friend of ours, Scott Keim, showed up, and the three of us said, you know, this is a lot of fun. We should maybe start playing something. And Scott said, well, I work for Paizo. We could do some Paizo stuff. And we started with a small group and started playing a little bit of Pathfinder, the beginner box. And as soon as Starfinder came out, he was saying, hey, there's a new thing. You guys want to try it? And we jumped right on top of it, and it was a lot of fun. And I, that was the group, kind of the core, that you and Mark joined a little bit later, a couple months after we had started. And that's a core group that I've been playing with pretty consistently now for 4 years. And that has brought so much to my life, you know, is before I could do a lot, you know, that was my social group and, you know, who I could hang out with and do things with. And now that I'm feeling better, you know, we've actually done a lot more things even outside of the gaming. So I think that gaming and Starfinder in particular has really brought me a lot of friendships that I wouldn't otherwise have had.
Well, that's that. I don't know that I knew the specifics of those beginnings. I mean, I'd heard that you were friends with Rob and that's how you gotten started. When Starfinder began, is it that you guys played by starting out with the first couple of Starfinder Society scenarios, or is it that you started with the Dead Sons? How did you, when you first sat down to play Starfinder, what did you play?
So we were doing the beginner box, and then for Pathfinder, and Starfinder came out, and we got the books. It was right after Gen Con. I had gotten the books, and Scott was saying how much it had taken off at Gen Con when they sold out of everything while they were there. We went right into Dead Sons. I mean, we recruited a couple more people. One more, maybe two more people. Yeah, we had two more people, and we just jumped right into Dead Sons, starting it. I think we spent a couple weeks kind of figuring out characters and stuff. But that's where we went in, right into Dead Sons, and Scott was GMing it, and he made a transition from, you know, the Pathfinder game we're doing to the Starfinder, in that basically we were in a shuttle doing a Pathfinder simulation, and then it landed in Bay 94 at Epsilon Station, and then they, you know, said, okay, game time's over, everybody's got to get, you know, disembark, so...
Oh, that's very clever. That's a very clever way to work into that. My first Starfinder experience, I didn't get in on the playtest, the pre-Gen Con playtest when it came out. Mm-hmm. But when I was tapped to write one of the first adventures, the one that had sort of this five-part sort of structure to it, some starship combat, some straightforward fighting. They said, well, you're going to need to know the rules, Ron, so let's get you the playtest versions of everything, the latest playtest versions of everything. And then they gave me access to some of the playtest stuff. And I got my regular group together that had been playing a lot of Pathfinder and said, hey, I need to borrow an evening from you guys again. Right. And they all sort of like, oh, you know, what do we play? What Pathfinder thing are we playtesting for you now, Ron? I'm like, no, this is actually, you know, you've heard the announcements about the new game they're doing. I need to playtest two of this. I got this sort of 5-part adventure I'm writing, and I feel like the part where you fight some ghouls in a spaceship I can handle. That's just a different kind of dungeon. But here's this weird Starship combat part, and then there was another sort of investigative part I wanted to some help out with. So I'm like, I need you guys to know enough of these rules to help me out and playtest these two parts that are only going to be like an hour each. And I knew full well that we would spend the big bulk of the first session, you know, oh, here's what the different characters are and what they can do. And here's some of the, you know, a lot of that ooh and ah factor that happens when you're looking at a new game. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, wait, what? We can shoot at anybody and don't have to worry about who's in combat with who. Right. And then playtested the two sessions, and they were like, yeah, and this Keskadi pregen is awful at everything related to Starship combat. I'm like, yeah, maybe I ought to mention that to them. But that was the first Starfinder. And then, but that, because we'd gotten together for one sort of test session, one playtest session, we just went right back to the Pathfinder we were playing. So it wasn't, we actually didn't end up playing any Starfinder in that home group. We just kept doing different variants, very different adventure paths and different, you know, homebrews and things like that of Pathfinder. So I actually didn't play in a consistent Starfinder game until I moved out here and joined up with you guys.
Right. So you were still freelancing in Chicago when you were tapped to write Into the Unknown, which is the very first Starfinder adventure.
Right. There's the commencement, I think, is the one they try to steer people to.
Right.
First. But yeah, it's intended to be kind of the thing that you can sit down and play an hour of, any of the 5 hours. They all do sort of come together in a story, but most of all, it's a kind of, here's 5 different ways to test run this system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ran that for about 20 hours at Emerald City Comic Con. So,
oh, so you got very used to it.
I got very, oh man, this is so crappy. I don't know who wrote this stuff, man. If I ever get a hold of this guy. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. No, we don't have to do Starship combat. We'll skip that part. Yeah, it's all messed up. No, you don't want to do that. It'll actually take 3 hours. It says an hour. It's 3 hours. You don't want to do that part.
Right, so. To do the Starship combat stuff. And they even told me when I said, oh, well, the Starship combat is just, its word count is not very high. It's exceedingly straightforward. Is there kind of enough meat to this? And they're like, oh goodness. Yeah. Yes. When people have been playing this game for 2, 3, 4 years, they'll look back at this and go, oh, that is just a basic, straightforward kind of Starship combat. But while people are learning the system, they need like the simplest possible thing in order to sort of understand the system and the different roles that come into it. And that was, so yes, please give us something that is very, very basic. Yeah.
Right, and the main issue with all the early Starship combat was the DC checks were too high, and it just really, especially for level one characters, it made it very difficult. So you spent a lot of time rolling dice and nothing happening because you couldn't make any skill DCs for
right. It was a real slog until they fixed some of the math.
Well, you know what's interesting? So you know, you were kind of mentioning that group, and then when you moved here. So I don't know that folks know how we got acquainted. So I'll go back to this group that we were playing Starfinder. So we had a group of us. There was myself, it was Ron Yaketa, Rob Helm, Scott Keim, and then a fellow named James and his son were playing. And what happened is James's son got a part in a play. He was in high school. And so then he couldn't make the games anymore. So both of them dropped out. And so we were looking for a couple fill-ins for this. It's like, man, there's 3 of us. We need a couple more players. And so Rob was asking some of his friends that gamed. And I hadn't gamed for a long time. I didn't have any friends. So I started putting posters up at different game stores. And one in particular in Bothell, where I live, Zulu's, I put up you know, looking for players for Starfinder poster up there. And that's how I got a hold of you.
Well, yeah, I came in. We lived in Bothell the first 6 months we were here. We had a short-term rental while we were looking for a permanent place. And I was really excited that it was a place, our place was just a few blocks away from a gaming store and kind of a very highly regarded one from what I could tell. So I went into Zulu's and sure enough, they've had one of those standard boards of players looking for games and games looking for players. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, Starfinder could be kind of fun. I think he'd even said, we've got a group, we're sort of ready to go. We just, you know, looking for people to add. I'm like, all right, well, this way I can kind of slip right into a game. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I've sort of said before that a gaming group is like pants, right? they're either going to fit okay or they're not going to fit. And if they don't fit, it's not the fault of the pants. You just try something different, right? So I was willing to come into this saying, well, we'll see what these guys are like. And if it's just not a good fit, okay, that's just fine. I'll go back and look and see what else is up on the board. But as it turned out, it was a great fit. I remember I reached out to you and, you know, via text because you had your number there. And you'd said, oh, you know, I said, I'm new to the area. I didn't mention that I worked at Paizo. I said, I'm new to the area.
Well, you didn't work there yet. You didn't work there yet.
That's true. That's true. That's what I'd come out for. But so you responded and say, oh, yeah, not only do we have a game, we're ready to go, but we've even got a Paizo employee that's going to be GMing it for us. And in my mind, I thought, oh, I wonder if it's going to be, you know, any of these people whose names I keep hearing about. Is it going to be Owen Casey Stevens? Is it going to be, you know, Joe Pacini? Is it going to be these other names that are this? Is it going to be James Sutter or Rob McCreary? These other Starfinder names I know. Well, no, it's this guy in accounting.
Yes.
I'm like, but as it turns out, I actually know that guy in accounting from having done my, you know, my checks at, you know, for freelancing that I'd done. And I'd made a point of meeting him at a PaizoCon and, you know, telling him thank you and getting to know him. So I knew who Scott Keim was.
Yeah.
And I knew that he was kind of this really, you know, personable, funny guy. I'm like, oh, well, that's great. So. Well,
yeah, it was really funny because you actually called up to chat. And it was during our game that you called up. I think when you sent the text and then we were talking because you were walking back home from Zulu's.
Oh, that's right. I had just looked at the thing. Yeah.
And so I, you know, we're chatting here and I said, oh, I said, Scott, do you know this guy?
I didn't realize that you were vetting me in real time. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yes.
So that was kind of funny. And I think I was actually trying to get you to come out that night even, but you said, no, it's too short a notice next time.
Yeah, I got to get my wife a little more notice than that. But man, you made it very easy because even though you're like, well, here's where we're playing in this next suburb over, you're like, look, but I live right here. I will come get you. I will pick you up. I'm like, oh, well, and I really appreciated that because I just didn't know the area very well yet.
Yeah.
And I was still in the mindset of having come from the Midwest, which is very, very flat, of moving to the Pacific Northwest where everything is very, very hilly. In the Midwest, when a road goes up a hill, it will go down the hill on the other side. And that is absolutely not the case here. Sometimes a road will go up and then it will turn a lot and then it will go up some more. And then maybe it goes down a little bit. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe there's a whole bunch of other roads that are up there. So it took me a while to get used to the three-dimensionality of the Pacific Northwest. And so I was still a little bit flustered. So I do appreciate talking about what we're thankful for. I'm thankful that you made it so easy for me to fit in by giving me a ride.
Well, to get settled. To be told, you lived about 3/4 of a mile from my house, so
right.
It wasn't very. I was like literally going by your house on the way there. So, now you had to go move so far away. That makes it so much tougher to hang out.
Yeah, well, you know, you're gonna get a house for a Paizo salary. You've got to go pretty far away from the place where the most people want to be.
Yes, that's
which out where out in the very rural lands, but no, it's been good. I've been very fortunate to be able to find this place and be able to move into it. You know, from my career change from lawyering, had some savings up that allowed me to get into a place that's really, really nice. I don't know. It's one of the many things that I'm really thankful for. I never pictured myself as sort of a rural chicken owning kind of person.
Chicken rancher,
but here I am.
Oh, well, you know, kind of in regards to being thankful about Starfinder and the group, you know, that was one group I started playing with, and we were playing, I think at the time we were playing every week, and eventually we had to slow down to every other week. And did we slow down before or after you joined? Do you remember?
Might have been before, because every other week was what I was most comfortable with.
Right. Okay. So I think we were going every week before that. And then I think just for preparation's sake and everything on Scott's part, we moved to every other week. And I was really excited about playing Starfinder. Okay. And so I kept reaching out, trying to find places. And I found a fella who was a venture lieutenant down in Redmond at the Uncle Store in Redmond Town Center. Okay. Who was willing to run some Starfinder for us. There was not a lot of Starfinder being run in the area. And myself joined, and then Ron Duketa, who was in our Dead Sons group, also went down and joined. And so he started running, and we get maybe one or two other people that normally would play Pathfinder come in and join. And we were able to start a small Starfinder group there with Sean Cunningham, who was the venture lieutenant at the time, running things. Eventually, he had to step back, and then so Ron and I started running things, and then Ron had to step back, and I ended up GMing. And what was nice is that because we were the only real Starfinder thing in the area, we were recruiting people from from Seattle. So we were in Redmond, so from Seattle, from down in Renton, from as far as Tacoma, you know, up north to Everett. So eventually, we were getting up to 3 tables a weekend of Starfinder in that little shop in Redmond.
And that's fantastic. There are so many small groups that wish they could grow with that kind of success, especially when it's not one of the monolithic games like, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, right? It's a real success story.
Yeah, and it was nice to have not only regular players there, you know, showing up to play, but also people stepping up to GM, so that I was a forever GM for a while, but I still got to play basically.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent.
Yeah. And now there are so many people willing to GM Starfinder in our lodge here from this group that I have to make a special effort to try to GM because everybody else is already scheduling wanting to GM.
So, well, and you needed to make that special effort in order to get your Novas, right?
Well, I mean, now I'm saying before I could GM as much as I wanted, but now, you know, we have multiple people out there that have 2, 3, some 4 Novas in our group because we have so many GMs working in the Seattle area for Starfinder in particular.
I see. That's great.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I'm thankful again in terms of that to have that kind of core group. You know, I played an awesome game. Our new venture lieutenant, Jocelyn Hamilton, was running it today. The newest Starfinder 9 to 12, 12th level. And I got to play with people from all over the world online, people that I've GM'd for many times in the past. And it was a blast to go in as a player and do that. It was like one of the funnest games I've had in a long time.
Oh, that's neat. That's neat. Yeah. That's building up a community like that, being able to sort of see it pay off and then be able to reach out so far to other parts of the world. That's just really satisfying.
Yeah. My wife was asking when I told her, you know, we had someone from the UK and someone from France in there, plus a couple other people outside the Seattle area. And then our local lodge folks. And she said, you know, why are they all coming here? I said, well, because we have a really active group and people know that we have an active group with good GMs. And so they will, especially Jocelyn now, constantly will be seeking out to play her games because they're very organized and run very well, and she does a great job. And I, you know, I in very, you know, I've GM'd a lot, and I very intentionally try to get into Jocelyn's games because I know how well run they're going to be.
Well, fantastic.
And she's now, just to give her a plug because she's so awesome, she's now the second recipient of 5 glyphs in the world.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. So on top of all of the Starfinder, also Pathfinder, and
yes,
so much of it that she's the 5 glyph. Wow.
Yeah. So she started with Starfinder. She was one of my players and started doing that for a couple of years and GMing that. So I think she's around her third or fourth Nova for that. But then is it when she took over the Venture Lieutenant activities, actually even before, she really started getting a lot of Pathfinder games going in conventions and locally. And that's how she's able to get that. And I mean, relatively short time. So.
Wow. That is really neat. Yeah, there's a lot of, for as much as the contributions I've given to these communities being writing adventures that they run, I certainly have, I don't have the level of experience when it comes to GMing or playing. I have to say that I did back in the Days of Living Greyhawk for 3rd edition Dungeons & Dragons. I had a administrator position in addition to a lot of writing, and I was at every single convention running tables all convention long. I mean, that's a and then seeing that kind of pass to other players, you know, junior players who've since sort of proven not only that they know the game, but they've kind of picked up some of the things that make a game really successful and can carry that forward. It's just really rewarding to see.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about the development here in the local group, and it makes me feel comfortable not feeling like I have to go and run every game now. You know, I mean, that's the way I felt for a long time, that, you know, I had to run a couple times a week. I had to make sure things were going, and now there's multiple people that are all, the world continues to turn even without me. So
well, that's certainly a thing to feel thankful for, right? I know the feeling of, well, if I'm not there, what, the whole thing's going to fall apart. So I've got to keep it going, and to realize you can kind of pass it on. I mean, that's, you know, that, well, not a lot of gaming clubs last that long. Like, not a lot of gaming clubs can survive that.
Well, I had to be very intentional about passing it on, in that the March before my transplant, I was not doing very well, and I told folks I had to step back, and I asked folks if they could step up, and they did in a big way. You know, the other thing I want to say I've been really thankful for is kind of the friendships and relationships I've been able to develop with so many people in the community, not just my local groups, but, you know, both with Paizo, with some third-party publishers, you know, across the No Direction Network. It's just amazing how folks have been receptive to accepting us in our podcasts and accepting me to interview them. I've done, I don't know for sure the total count because I quit counting after 50 or 60, but I think I've done about 100 interviews with people in the gaming industry, you know, from luminaries like Steve Jackson and Jeff Grubb and Wolfgang Bauer to, you know, brand new freelance authors. You know, I just interviewed someone relatively new last week named Ruveid Virk, who is, you know, just has a couple of credits. So it's been really cool to be able to do that, to get to know so many different people.
Look across. Well, it's really exciting that you're doing that for a lot of people. I know that even now, I feel like I'm very well established. It's still kind of a thrill whenever somebody reaches out. Oh, hey, do you mind, you know, would you be willing to do a quick interview about this product or about that line or about, I'm like, oh gosh. Oh, sure. You just want to talk to little old me. So that's been one of the things that I'm really thankful for, not just the opportunity to write, which is something that I find just so indescribably valuable, but the opportunity to, like, talk about it, right? The opportunity to actually say, well, this piece that I wrote was important to me, and here's why, or, here's sort of a meaningful thing about what I wrote, right? I know kind of behind on my side of the keyboard when it's, for example, interesting that an adventure I wrote involves a local election. But then to be able to talk about how, and I was involved in a local election, did not win, but that's okay. You know, and that made it, that was very personal to me. And that's sort of fun to be able to go into and add.
Yeah, I guess I should mention special thanks to Ryan and Paramount No Direction, especially Ryan, who I think actually listens to every single one of these digital divinations and continues to allow us to be on the air. I really enjoy the time that we get to spend together talking, because oftentimes when we're meeting in person, we're gaming and we don't have a lot of extra time just to chat like this. And in fact, this ends up being a lot of our catch-up chat before and after we're recording.
Right. We haven't rehearsed ahead of time the answers to questions. No. Like, oh, so what have you done in the last week? I'm genuinely interested, John, in what you did in the last week when I asked that question.
Yeah, so for sure. Me too. You know, I always want to know what's up with you, Stephanie, and the kids. So
yeah, it's been great. Getting our friend, the twins' birth mom, settled in has been a real sort of joy. She's been out here for a couple months, but she's got a great, great job now. I brought back a lot of things that she'd had in storage in Chicago that she's been going through with Stephanie. So a lot of that are mementos from when she was really young that she didn't want to get rid of, but didn't want to move with her. So she put it into storage, and being able to, you know, hear her talk about, you know, oh, this is important to me and this is why. I mean, that's a real blessing too. I feel like there's been sort of a lot of things to be really thankful for in that recently. That's what's been a lot of our time. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been really good to see. It's not so bad, I think, that my freelance schedule is starting to dip just a little bit, because there's a lot of this right around the holidays. There's always more time spent with families this year in particular, where I feel like a lot of my family members are sort of more understanding since the pandemic has gone on for so long. They're like, oh, hey, let's meet and let's find a day when the weather's good and do it at a park. Right. And that, like, oh, well, you know, the idea of meeting outside because that helps prevent the spread is not a thing that you need to worry or discuss anymore. When somebody offers, hey, let's get together, let's find a park or something, then you know that you're both speaking the same language of how can we do this and be safe and yet still talk to somebody we haven't seen in several months. And I, you know, as much as it's not a great thing to be getting used to, the fact that people are more used to it makes the holidays a lot easier, I feel.
Yes, and I think along those lines, I'm very thankful that this holiday, Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, for us in the States, I will be able to see both my daughters, because my youngest moved to Vancouver, BC, just in the end of August. And because of the proximity now and the fact that, you know, we're all vaccinated and they're vaccinated, we're actually able to visit and do things together as family that, you know, we hadn't been able to do for over a year and a half. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Great to hear. Well, I don't know, you know, I guess we're ever closer to the time when, you know, you can have, you know, you and your whole family and me and my whole family maybe get together for something.
Soon. We have to wait a couple more weeks, I think.
We do. I've got
gets done.
Yeah, my twins have their first shot in arms. Their second is scheduled, and then the period after that. I feel like there's a lot of my friends that have been friends and family members that are very cautious, and part of the reason they've been cautious because we have not had a fully vaccinated household, because my twins are too young for that. They are, and so I'm already thinking about, all right, well, now we have a fully vaccinated household, and what does that mean? Who can we now see that has been sort of cautious before? And I don't know, I guess any of them that were cautious before not because of the vaccine, but because we Lundines bring an awful lot of chaos whenever we go. I guess there's still no reason for them to subject themselves to our presence, but we'll see.
Especially as your kids are getting older, you know, it seems like there's more chaos now.
Oh my goodness, yes. Yeah, nobody, I think, is as ready. Nobody, no matter how ready they feel to have a teenager, is never ready to have a teenager. I felt like I was very ready to have a teenager. Oh man, I was wrong. Ah, such drama.
I know. Well, pretty soon you're going to have multiples before.
I'm going to
have
three. Oh. See, and I say right now, but I think having one, I'll be ready for that. And I know for a fact I won't be ready for that.
I think maybe you won't be, but I think Stephanie will be. She seems to have a firm grasp on everything. So
yes. I guess if there's the one thing I have going in my life that I'm absolutely most thankful for is Stephanie, I have to say, without a doubt. I couldn't be here without her. I couldn't do the things that I do without her. I wouldn't be the man that I am without her. I mean, that's without a doubt, she is a thing I'm most thankful for in my whole life.
Yeah, I think both of us have some special spouses, and I look forward to the time that maybe we can all do some more things together. So,
yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there soon.
All right. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.